The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. And if both of us sound a little bit drowsy this morning, everybody, it's because one of us loves the other one so much that he agreed to get up really early on a Sunday morning so the other one could get to Brighton versus Southampton in time. And my word, Kieran, it is early. The air seems so clear and everything's so quiet at 9:15 in the morning. It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, that's right. When I first asked you to do this at this stage, you said, "Who do you think I am, a fucking milkman?"
Words to that effect, Kieran. Yes, I'm also aware that there are many people around the world who are thinking 9:15, and we've been up. The day's done. We're over. The other one sounds a bit drowsy. How was the mission, Kieran? How was your golf night out?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was Shepherd's Bush Empire, Rose of Avalanche, and Balaman the Angel, who were very, very ropey indeed. The latter, but the former were great. And then the mission, and 60-year-old men with man buns throwing confetti in the air to certain songs is where it should be.
Yeah, I saw your impassioned tweet about the fact that Quavers were on sale in the foyer at a mission gig.
Yes. It's not very goth, is it?
It's not particularly goth, but neither is throwing confetti in the air, is it, really? I should think Wayne Hussey was quite cross about not being able to hear the music over the crunch of Quavers. I'm surprised that you could all concentrate on the music as you've shown photographs of your grandchildren to each other. But there you go. I'm glad you had a nice time.
Thank you very much.
It's Questions Day, Kieran, and we are recording on a Sunday morning. I think there's one news story we have to reflect on. We saw Scunthorpe relegated to the National League last week, and Scunthorpe are a team we've spoken about on and off for a while, but a team we've been speaking about on a very regular basis. Oldham Athletic became, and I'm sure they won't be happy with this stat, but they became the first ever team to have played in the Premier League to end up in the National League amidst some very unpleasant scenes yesterday. The game was abandoned, and then the players were recalled after an hour and a half to play the last 12 minutes behind closed doors. So not only have Oldham been relegated, Kieran, but they're now being threatened with huge financial penalties for what happened on the pitch yesterday. So not a good time all round for Oldham fans.
No, and this has been coming. We talk ad nauseum about relationships between fans and owners, and owners having the right principles. Well, we've seen with regards to the Oldham ownership, far too many conflicts, far too much interference. Where if you own a football club, then your job is to provide funding, is to provide communication, is to provide infrastructure. It's not to meddle with the team or the manager in terms of what he can and cannot do. Everybody should have their own responsibilities. And I think we saw when Paul Scholes is an Oldham fan. When he was a kid, I remember playing cricket against Paul Scholes, and he's from that broadly that neck of the woods, because I played against him when he was playing for Newton Heath. It was quite clear from his comments at the time that things weren't right. They've had a succession of managers who trying to run the football club activities on the pitch when you've got one hand tied behind your back is not easy. It's a sad day because Oldham for a few years, they were absolutely fantastic. Mm. They were punching above their weight, but they did superbly well to get to the FA Cup semi-final, to get to the Premier League, to get to the League Cup final, and so on. And it's a sorry day for Oldham fans. All I would say to them is, you'll be feeling terrible at present, but come August, you've still got 42 fixtures to look forward to, and there's going to be plenty of tasty derbies, in the National League next season. New grounds to visit, so hope springs eternal. But it's not an easy division to get out because it practically every side in the National League is now full time.
Well, hope may not spring that eternal, Kieran, if they still have the same owners and technically, as grown up broadcasters, we are supposed to condemn the behaviour of those Oldham fans after the game. But I do no such thing. I absolutely applaud how Oldham fans behaved, because I think we would have done the same at Brighton or Palace. And it's hard to disagree with those Oldham fans who are telling the world that the club has been financially mismanaged when they've just been relegated to the National League. It's very difficult for the owners to say, no, we're doing a good job, when they quite clearly haven't. And when you've been warning about this virtually since the pod started, they were on your red list, your emergency list of badly run, badly financed clubs right from the start. And this is, unfortunately, a depressing conclusion.
Yeah, and Oldham fans organisations such as Push the Boundary, they've been in contact with a regular basis. They asked me to go in as an independent, and I genuinely never have any agenda. My view is from day one of this show, and you know me long enough. It's to be transparent. It's to explain things. It's to highlight risks. And they said, would I go as an independent? And I say, I'll do it for gratis. I don't charge money because I'm a fan first and foremost. And take a look and just offer to explain things to the fans. Because sometimes things aren't as bad as perhaps the headlines and lack of communication. And Oldham turned round and said, well, why do we need a chartered accountant looking at our books? We're quite happy with the unaudited accounts that we publish. Mm. And remember, they're published, I think it's either their 2019 or their 2020 accounts, where they couldn't even get the cash balance right. There's one thing you should be, there's lots of things in a set of accounts which I can say, we can make that a bit higher or a bit lower. You should know how much cash you got in the bank on a particular day.
Mm. I suppose one consolation, Kieran, for Oldham, speaking of cash, is that they will be one of the best supported clubs in that league next season. They will be getting decent crowds, I imagine, and if they've got new owners, they'll be getting very good crowds. And at that level, match day income does make a difference, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And they will also get they get 2 years of parachute payments from the EFL. So in the first year, they get 100% of the EFL payments to League Two clubs. And in the second year, they get 50%. So there is that protection as well if they do have players on outstanding contracts and the fans are worried about it from that point of view. But, there's no reason why Oldham can't get very good crowds. And also, away fans from National League clubs, they'll be wanting to come to get this new ground on.
Yeah, of course. Questions then, Kieran. And as always, we've got some very interesting ones. And as always, I will say that doesn't imply that we've got some not interesting ones. They're all interesting. The first one comes from Joe McCormick. Joe says, I believe in the principle behind financial fair play. However, I don't support it in its current form. Because in principle, assuming rules are enforced, it doesn't give an owner the ability to invest in their club in a way that any other business owner would. However, what's stopping an owner from selling a season ticket for one seat in the stadium to a family member or friend for a ridiculous amount of money, effectively finding a loophole around the rules by masking investment as ticketing revenue? It's an interesting question. It's also interesting, Kieran, following your interview with the guy who wrote Soconomics, who says that this idea that football is somehow different to other businesses is erroneous as well, isn't it? So Joe's got two interesting points here.
Yes. First of all, in terms of the owner's ability to invest in the club, that they do. Owners can put in as much money as they so desire into a football club in either loans or shares, but only a certain amount of that will qualify for profitability, sustainability, or stroke FFP purposes. So I think there is a lot of confusion around. I know, you know, I've listened to people such as Stoke City saying, you know, why can't we put in loads and loads of money? But you can. You just, not all of it counts towards FFP. But in terms of Joe's second comment, there is nothing at present to stop an owner from selling a season ticket for one seat. Because if we take a look at Chelsea Football Club, Chelsea used to sell a ticket to a Mr. R. Abramovich each season for the princely sum of £1 million.
Crikey, is that in the books?
It's in the books, yeah. Wow. And he used to buy that ticket every year. Until he and the UK government fell out about his visa, which was probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and then he stopped doing that. So there are ways of doing that. Now, the Premier League are now certainly tightening up the rules with any transactions to do with what's referred to related parties. But prior to that, there was nothing to stop this taking place. So you know, there are ways and means around this.
That's really interesting. I'm slightly disappointed for Joe McCormick, because I reckon Joe, quite rightly, was sitting there thinking to himself, I've come up with the best loophole ever. They need to close this. And it turns out that people have been taking advantage of that for quite some time. Would there, Kieran, then be anything to stop, once Chelsea's new owners have been confirmed, would there be anything to stop them selling a season ticket to R. Abramovich for £1 million again, so he could still somehow fund the club?
No, they're perfectly entitled to do that, because he would no longer be a related party to the club, because he won't be an owner. So I think under the new rules, all commercial contracts of more than £1 million have to be viewed by the Premier League to determine whether they've been sold at fair value. But under the present rules, you could sell, sell as many £1 million tickets as you want. I mean, Fulham are trying to do that to a certain extent by charging £1,000 for their season tickets for next season, which is a rip off. That's to regular fans, but no, the £1 million ticket is still available.
I'm sorry, Kieran. Say that again. Fulham are charging. How much?
Fulham are charging £1,000 for some of their season tickets.
Well, that's fine for Richard Osman. That's money down the back of the sofa for Richard Osman, right, if he can reach down that low, of course. But are they? Fulham?
Yeah. Oh, they're Fulham. Yeah, they announced that recently. I think it's fair to say a lot of Fulham fans are underwhelmed by such an approach. But that's where the clubs are going. Manchester United are now selling match day tickets at £160 a pop.
Holy mother of God. Fulham is one of those strange clubs that people assume, a little bit like Chelsea, that because it's in West London, it's by the river, it must be full of affluent fans. But you only have to go to the Hammersmith End or the Putney End to know that it's not. It's there's a lot of traditional legacy West London fans. I'm slightly astonished to hear that, Kieran. Also, one of my favourite moments in football, which is I was at a Fulham game in the press box, and there was just a couple of legacy fans behind us with their daughter, and there was an announcement about some traditional thing that was going on, and it was in honour of Jimmy Hill, and I just heard the daughter sigh a little bit. And I said, "Are you all right?" She said, "No, I know what's coming." And her father just went, "Can we not get through a whole 90 minutes without another ucky mention of Jimmy Hill?" Dave Whittaker has a question for us, Kieran.
Mm.
And I think it's fair to say that our interview with Barry Hearn last week had quite the reaction. And I think it's fair to say that for some people he was Mr. Chalk and some he was Mr. Cheese. There were some Orient fans who weren't happy in particular. There were some people who found him very interesting and amusing. But it's his comments about the Olympic Stadium were what got a big response. And Dave's question is off the back of that. Dave Whittaker says, "I've heard a disturbing report that the Olympic Park, including its various venues, has been revalued down dramatically from £57.8 million to just £200,000, which hardly seems credible. Is there any truth in it? And as a West Ham fan, should I be concerned?"
Well, first of all, Dave, yes, there's a lot of truth in it. Well, if you take a look at the accounts of LLDC, the London Legacy Development Corporation or something like that, they do have new surveyors in. And what they do is they say, well, if somebody was going to buy this and then earn money from rent, looking at the current rental agreements, and there's lots of individual parts of property which are sort of in the Olympic Park, how much rent would we get in? And the answer is diddly squat. So therefore, because you're not going to generate any rental income, you wouldn't be prepared to pay much for the property as a whole. So the £200,000 valuation does appear to be appropriate. And then if you go to the accounts of E20 Stadium Limited, and I've got some credit here. I think Dave probably picked up this story from the excellent West Ham website, Claret and Hugh, who really do a very forensic job of what's happening behind the scenes at West Ham. If you take a look at the E20 Stadium, which is the Olympic Stadium itself, purely the stadium, that has been valued at £0. And the reason for that is, as Barry Hearn was intimating, West Ham have got such a fantastic deal on the stadium that it's not actually worth anybody buying it. And just to give you some evidence of this, West Ham pay £2.8 million in rent a year, but the landlords last year paid £11.5 million on stadium improvements. So it's going to take 4 years or to get the money back just from the improvements, and let alone the stadium itself. So it's an absolute disaster from the taxpayer's perspective. But you know those type of things tend to go under the radar, so the London Stadium is worth nothing from an investor's point of view because West Ham have got a 99-year lease at £2.8 million a year for a £700 million stadium. It makes no sense whatsoever. Should Dave be worried or concerned? I would say no because they are locked into a long-term contract. I know that the Mayor of London has sort of made mutterings that they would like to renegotiate the contract. But if I was West Ham, and Barry Hearn himself said, he's got no beef with the club. The Mayor of London sits down and says, well, we'd like to renegotiate the rent. And West Ham say, no, thanks. We're fine. We're quite happy with it. And what do you do? Yeah, contracts are contracts. So was it poorly negotiated? I think certainly eyebrows can be raised on behalf of the taxpayer, but on behalf of the tenant, it's a fantastic deal. And yet, why is West Ham valued at such a high price? Given that Golden Sullivan paid relatively little to buy the club. And now they're sort of selling it for somewhere in the region of £600 to £800 million. It's because they've got this amazing asset at a very, very low cost to themselves.
Yeah, that West Ham website you mentioned is yet another example of why club owners underestimate fans at their peril.
Yep.
And I'm not saying, Kieran, that my wife is shallow because you know her and you know that my wife is not shallow, but
no,
she's not a fan of Barry Hearn. And she wasn't that impressed when I said that we were interviewing Barry Hearn. And when I went back in and she said, how did that go with Barry Hearn? I said, it was great. He had a real go at Boris Johnson. And now Barry Hearn's her favourite person. And that's all. And she went, oh, really, did he? So and I explained in the detail into which Barry Hearn criticised Boris Johnson. And she went, oh, maybe I've underestimated him. Our next question, Kieran, comes from Down Under. It comes from Australia. I some people listening to this, Kieran, will have heard me on Radio New Zealand last night.
Really?
Yeah, their equivalent of the Today Show. I assume you'd left your phone off for some reason. So they phoned me. They wanted to talk to me about things about football, and in particular about Silver Lake investing in the All Blacks. And I pointed out that you probably have the wrong person, but I will talk about the emotions of such things. But The lovely guy from Radio New Zealand blindsided me. He's a big fan of the podcast and he talked about the pod a lot. But then he said, one thing I can't understand is you two football lovers doing a podcast about the bad things in football. He said, it's like a dog lover podcast talking about rabies every week. I've not thought of it like that before, Colin, but you're quite right, I suppose, in a way. So now I'm going to pitch to produce a dog lovers podcast, but without the rabies bit, because as we've seen, producer Guy's widening his portfolio now with his new podcast about film finance, which is very good. But Ben Archer in Australia says, firstly, I'd like to thank you, not just for the enjoyable and highly informative podcast, but also for reintroducing this expat to phrases such as mugging off, which is very nice for somebody. Somebody who went to Australia in the 70s is probably just a lovely nostalgic glow when he hears people being mugged off on our podcast. You have my eternal gratitude, says Ben. Secondly, you've spoken about the financial implications for going up and down the leagues in the UK, but I was wondering about other European leagues. I follow the fortunes of several teams around Europe in cities I've visited, and many of them are yo-yo clubs. So could you please give some insight into the ways in which promotion and relegation from League One, League One, I beg your pardon, the Bundesliga, Serie A, and the Airtricity League in Ireland can have an impact on club finances?
Right. It does very much vary from country to country based on the TV deals. So as far as the Airtricity League in Ireland, because the overall deal is not worth a lot of money, there's not a big step up or step down in terms of promotion. If we take a look at the Bundesliga, the Bundesliga is quite complicated, but to be fair, the Bundesliga's website is fantastically detailed in respect of this. So the money is split into four pillars or four columns. Some is split evenly between the 18 clubs in the Bundesliga. Some's based on performance. I think we have mentioned this before. Some is based on the number of under 23 players.
Yeah.
Which individual clubs. It's only 3%. And what they are now introducing, which makes me slightly twitchy, is they're distributing money based on, and I quote, interest. And I thought, oh, is this something to do with finance? And right. I said, no, it's actually how popular you are in terms of things like social media.
Oh.
I've always been a bit concerned that, when are UEFA going to introduce rules that the person, the club with the highest number of Instagram followers gets a one goal start to a match just to appease the greedy clubs to whom it does appear to be somewhat starry eyed towards. As far as some of the money being split is concerned, what the Bundesliga do is they also split money based on what they refer to as a 5-year ranking. And this is based over a club's performance in the top two divisions. So if you've had 3 years in Bundesliga and 2 years in Bundesliga 2, the 3 years that you've had in Bundesliga itself counts towards how much of the TV money you get. So it is quite complicated. Hmm. Even so, there is a significant gap between the bottom of the Bundesliga and top of Bundesliga 2. And the money is ultimately, it's very much focused at the top because last night, we're recording this on Sunday morning, last night, Bayern Munich won the Bundesliga for the 10th season in a row. And that's the danger with these type of models. If we take a look at Spain, and again, the only reason why I've looked at Spain in particular because their website's very good. If you finish bottom of La Liga, you get 58 million euro. Now that compares to around about 100 million sterling for the side finishing bottom of the Premier League. If you are top of Segunda division, you get 10 million. So there is a big gap. But again, they do have parachute payments. So if we take a look at Espanyol, who were relegated the previous season, on top of the 10 million euro they got, they also got around about 30 million euro in parachute payments. So the gap is lower, but it's lower because a combination of A, the TV deal is smaller, and B, that they do have parachute payments. So it very much varies from country to country. I think we've spoken at length in terms of Scotland. When I'm doing the analysis, I keep records of all 92 clubs in the top four divisions, as well as the National League clubs here, and also monitor all of the Scottish clubs. Why is it that Scottish clubs don't lose money to the same extent as clubs in England? It's the gaps between divisions are that much lower, and therefore there's no incentive to overspend. That incentive is there in Europe, but not to the same extent, because the rewards of getting to the top division are not as great as they are in England.
I feel I should point out to new listeners here, Kieran, that you are so dedicated to football finance that you would keep those records of all the clubs in England and Scotland, regardless of whether we're doing this podcast or not, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Baroness says I am obsessed, and I am.
Yeah,
it's an affliction rather than a merit point, I can assure you, as far as my marriage is concerned.
Well, you're obsessed with the Baroness, just in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Our next question comes from Henry Cheese. And Henry Cheese is a Brighton fan, so I'm going to fill my boots at some stage during this Q&A.
I thought this is too much of an open goal for you, surely.
In fact, no, I almost feel like I'm going to get down on my knees and head the ball over the line here, Kieran. It would be unfair because Henry Cheese is just, I'm amazed he hasn't changed his name to Henry Bree, because the other Brighton fans must be really sad. We can't just have a cheese in the stadium. But anyway, as Marmite cheese, Kieran, have you seen? Oh, my goodness me. As a fellow seagull, and I love the way Brighton fans refer to themselves, as a fellow seagull, and that's probably how Henry Cheese talks, I imagine, as well. I don't know what the working-class Brighton accent is, but if there is, you won't hear it in your stadium. As a fellow seagull, I'm really worried about the quality of the cheese involved. I'm sure Kieran is as delighted. Apologies, Henry, as genuinely as much as I can apologise to a Brighton fan, I apologise, Henry. I'll tell you what, I'll wait till I'm at the Palace game tomorrow night and I'll tell my mates that we had a Brighton fan called Henry Cheese and we'll do all the puns around the table in the pub. I'm sure Kieran is as delighted as I am to have Tony Bloom at the helm of the Amex. Although, what was it Barry Hearn referred to Tony Bloom as? What was his poker name?
The Lizard.
Oh, the Lizard, yeah. I can't imagine Tony Bloom is too pleased to be called the Lizard, but there you are.
No. He likes it. He's a Lizard because he never gives anything away.
Are lizards famous? I would have gone for long.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever been stared at by a lizard?
Not for long, no. I thought maybe Tony Bloom had an impressively long tongue that he checked the temperature of the air with. But as delighted as I am to have Tony Bloom at the helm of the Amex, over the years, our illustrious chairman has lent us lots of money for the stadium, etc., and seems to keep us going year on year. Heaven forfend, which is a very Henry Cheese thing to say, but heaven forfend. But what does Kieran think would happen if he did the unthinkable and walked away? And I know you think that's not going to happen, but how much would we owe him? Is the state of our accounts such that we could survive? And are we an attractive purchase for another buyer? I mean, I think this is a question that the fans of 70 clubs in the Premier League and the EFL are asking themselves, aren't they?
Yeah.
About their own clubs, Kieran, not about Brighton.
Yeah, sure.
They don't care about Brighton.
Brighton of Albion owe Tony Bloom £337 million.
Mm-hmm.
So can they afford to repay that? No, they can't. Is he going to ever ask for it back? No, he ain't. Yeah, right. It's as simple as that. I mean, his family were on the board many years ago. He's been watching the club since he was 6 years old. He goes with his brother. You know, we see him on matches coming back on the train. He's just there,
yeah,
with his satchel and his bag of sandwiches and his scarf around his neck. He doesn't even want to travel with the team. You know, as far as he's concerned, he's a fan who happens to be a ridiculously smart mathematician, on which much of his success has been based. And he's one very, very smart cookie. So if he walked away and demanded his money, the club would have to be sold. Could the club survive? Well, the club's been in the Premier League for four seasons, for which we've got set of accounts, and we've lost money in three of those years. It cost a fortune to get to the Premier League in the first place. So things would have to change. And although, you know, I hear fellow fans moaning, you know, we need to spend more money. If Tony Bloom left, the club will be spending less. Never forget his contribution to the club. Are we an attractive purchase for another buyer? As a Premier League club, you are always an attractive purchase. And you know, based on my valuation, I think the club would be somewhere in that region of £200 to £230 million. So he wouldn't get his money back if he sold it. But you know, it certainly would be an attractive purchase. Relatively new stadium, decent match day income, good facilities in terms of infrastructure. So you've not got those additional costs that, you know, that we're seeing potentially arising at some other clubs. So yeah, it would be attractive. Have people been interested? Well, they might have been, but I think they've just been got a firm rebuff. You know, why invest all that money in the club and then walk away?
Your location surely would make you an attractive purchase for another buyer, wouldn't it, Kieran?
I think from an international buyer's point of view, you know, let's be honest, Gatwick Airport is half an hour away. So things like that do count. There's lots of pluses, but there's no desire to sell.
Yeah, lots of countryside, easy access to many delicatessens. I would have thought.
Absolutely. Great cheeses.
Great cheeses, yeah, yeah. Henry Cheese, by the way, is not my favourite football-related cheese name. There's a fantastic England goalkeeper, Peter Stilton. He's my favourite.
Oh, Jesus. That's a BAFTA loser.
That's one of the first. It's one of the first jokes I ever heard when I was a kid. It still makes me laugh now. It's very funny. And of course, there's that hard cheddar that when we finish above you, which please God will happen. South Coast derby today, Kieran, isn't it? The South End.
According to the newspapers, but according to Brighton Southampton fans, we've not got a clue what they're on about. There's one team that we hate, and that's it. You know, as far as Southampton are concerned, they're just another Premier League team.
Yeah, we don't like Southampton much either. But as you say, there's only one team. To the amusement of Millwall and Charlton fans, I've said, boys, walk on, move on. We've got there's nothing to see here. Just keep going straight down to the South Coast.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamacq, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Tony Hamilton has a question. Tony Hamilton says, I read that ex-Grimsby Town manager Russell Slade is heading up legal action about clubs and leagues selling players' data to companies including bookmakers. In law, who owns the data, the players, the clubs or the leagues? It's an interesting question, Kieran, which we have tried to explain before, but it's complicated and murky, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I might try and get Russell on the show to explain it more.
Yeah,
I think he. But the position is that there's an awful lot of data being collated about footballers. You know, from the likes of Opta and StatsBomb and so on. So there's many of these data management companies who are recording, you know, passes won, headers won, shuttles, you know, turnarounds, you name it, with regards to the players. And that data is then being sold to a variety of commercial clients. I've got a beef with that at all, including bookmakers, help them to set the odds,
yeah.
including opposing clubs, because you know the more that you know about your opponent, then the better you can set yourself up. But there is a view taken that, is this a breach of GDPR? Is this a breach of intellectual property? Is this a breach because these are the player's statistics, and should therefore the player claim legal ownership with regards to them? And if so, should there be a body set up to manage and to collate and to sell that data on behalf of the players, or should the players be on a commission in terms of what the existing organisations are doing? So that's where we are. There is, I think, what's referred to as an impasse at present between the Russell Slade's organization, which is effectively on behalf of the players. I don't think the leagues would be able to claim ownership because you then have issues in terms of when a player signs a contract, does he sign a contract with the league or the club? The club signed the player's registration. The club has intellectual property with regard to the badge and potentially some of the likenesses as to the players. But those are separate deals organised by FIFPro and the clubs in terms of when they sell those rights to the computer games companies and so on. But I think Tony's question is interesting. Yeah, it's gone very quiet, this particular story. It doesn't mean that things aren't taking place behind closed doors, though.
Well, maybe we should get Russell on, because the interesting one there, Kieran, is the computer games thing, because their stats are legendarily second to none, and we hear stories about Premier League clubs even approaching companies and asking access to their stats because they're so deep, especially in terms of transfers from all around the world. And you'd think if there's money to be made for players from this, it would be from the computer games companies rather than, say, bookmakers.
And also the computer games companies themselves are now selling that data to football clubs. And footballers, could a footballer say, I've just seen my FIFA 2022 stats and they make me look bad, and I'm about to renew a contract, and this is actually prejudicing my ability to negotiate a better contract with my employer or to find a better job. So it's an intriguing position, and I know lots of people play FIFA, and I'm not allowed to play FIFA on the grounds that you spend enough time on that bloody spreadsheet if you think I'm letting you spend any more time doing football and numbers. So the Baroness doesn't let me play, but I know we had somebody from Sports Interactive on the show. I've forgotten his name a few years ago. And he said, for every number that you see on the screen, there's 10 behind it, which are going forwards and constantly updating algorithms and so on.
I had a brief moment of panic there, Kieran, when I thought you were asking me to remember the name.
That's Tom Markham. Tom Markham.
I only remember Barry Hearn was on last week because I've written Barry Hearn in giant letters in felt tip pen on my script. There are rumours, anecdotally, that there are several players who are unhappy with their stats on the latest FIFA. I suppose the other side of that argument is that players, how are players going to collate their own stats if they want intellectual ownership of them? The thing that makes me laugh the most as well is suddenly amongst older players like Paul Merson and Graham Souness are now firmly convinced that players are skewering their own stats when they say somebody's passing, passing rate is 97%. They just go, that's because they're doing short passes to their mate, just spending the last 10 minutes knocking it about to each other, I quite like the idea that players could be mischievous enough just to skew the stats by doing stuff like that. I'll tell you the reason I missed that is to muck up EA games. I love this next question from Anthony O'Meara, because this is a sort of question, were I a listener to the pod, this is exactly the sort of question I would be sending in. Never mind something complicated about amortization and stadium value. As Anthony O'Meara's question is, can you tell me, please, why Wigan weren't deducted any points after they went into administration? So far, so good. My club, Bolton, were drowning in a piss puddle in the gutter. And then the EFL decided to put a foot on our neck, yet Wigan weren't even deducted a point. That's a proper... There's some lads, including Anthony, in a pub in Bolton somewhere, going, piss puddle in the... Tell you what, let's ask Kieran Maguire. This is the problem, isn't it, Kieran? Fans are constantly bemused when the punishment don't seem to be applied equally, and people are unable to tell us why that's not the case.
Yeah, yeah, especially as Wigan were deducted 12 points for going into administration. so I can't understand Anthony being unhappy. But there's no reason to be, Anthony, in the sense that Wigan were deducted 12 points after the new owner, Al Young, having passed the fit and proper test 4 weeks after acquiring Wigan Athletic, put it into administration.
Yeah.
Now, the administrators subsequently, and remember, these are the administrators who feel that there should be a statue of themselves built at the DW Stadium. They possibly do that out of the proceeds of their fees. I think we'll be talking about the Derby County administrators' fees on Thursday show, by the way.
Yes, we will. I saw your teaser tweet. They're quite eye-opening, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Wigan were subsequently relegated. The administrators did put in an appeal with regards to the 12-point deduction, which they lost. So I can understand Anthony not being keen on Wigan because he's from Bolton, but I'm afraid his first assertion wasn't quite correct. They did get a points deduction, and they didn't successfully defend it when they went to appeal. And the only winners were, of course, the lawyers, because I think they claimed a very handsome sum for putting in the appeal.
Yeah, that's why I like the question so much and why I'm inclined to like Anthony O'Meara, because we would have been sat around the table in the pub going, hang on a second, I'm sure they were deducted some points.
And I'll start the email.
I'd be the one going, no, they weren't. They definitely weren't. And if they weren't deducted enough, it doesn't matter. It's like, Brian McCafferty has a question.
Another angry fan.
Yes. You'll need to explain a term in this question to me, Kieran, and perhaps to certain listeners. Brian McCafferty says, I was wondering about zombie companies such as Rangers, who survive by selling shares. At what stage does this fall foul of UEFA FFP rules? I presume a zombie company is not an insult, Kieran. It's a technical term, is it?
No, it's an insult.
Oh, it's okay. Two for two.
Yes, it is an insult.
Right, in that case, can I just point out to the Rangers fans listening, this is Brian McCafferty's question. I merely read them out.
Yes, and I, Kieran Maguire, don't have a dog in this particular fight either.
I
was even mentioned at the Rangers annual general meeting. And I was going, Jesus Christ, what have I done now? Apparently, but no, John Bennett, who again was kind enough to come on the show, was praising. He says, if people want to understand about Rangers finances, they should listen to The Price of Football.
Oh, very good.
We're going. Thank you very much, Sean. But in terms of going back to Brian's broader question, if clubs are losing money, and Rangers have lost money, along with Brighton Hove Albion, along with probably 70 clubs in the English in English football as well, how do you fund those losses? Now, you can do that through selling players. Rangers haven't gone down the selling players route. Yeah, they focused. Yeah, and again, we had John Bennett on the show, and he says, yeah, we're in a recovery phase. We're investing in squads. We don't want to be selling players. So they can sell players. They can operate a break-even model. But you know, if you're trying to catch up with another club, you are going to probably incur losses. Or you can have funding from either in the form of debt. We've said on many occasions, banks don't want to lend to football clubs because if things go wrong with the loan, you don't want to be the bank manager that calls in a loan in respect of Rangers Football Club. That's not good. Then the alternative is to issue shares. And the thing about if you do issue shares, shares are irredeemable in the sense that there is no repayment date. And under UEFA rules, and this sort of goes back to one of our earlier questions, you are allowed to issue as many shares as you want, but the amount that counts towards financial fair play is effectively capped at 25 million euro over a three-year period. Now, under the new sustainable rules that UEFA are going to introduce, that number is going to be increased, but there's lots of caveats and there is a ridiculous amount of small print that I am having a lot of fun going through at present, as you can imagine. This is why I have no friends. But it doesn't fall foul of the FFP rules, unless the funding is coming in the form of debt, because that doesn't count towards FFP.
You have many friends, Kieran. You've got the Prowler. the Baroness loves you very much. She and also counts as a friend. And also, you've got plenty of fanboys, Kieran, as we discovered when we did the live pod. You've got lots of friends. The last question comes from Rick. Oh no, actually, Kieran. Now it's just occurred to me.
Oh.
You mentioned banks don't like lending to football clubs.
Yeah,
they still do it quite a lot. I mean, somebody lent, you know, Tottenham a hell of a lot of money, didn't they? So they obviously, some clubs, they're perfectly happy and secure in the knowledge that they won't ever go into financial difficulties.
Yeah, but Tottenham's loans came from the investment banking. If you are Bank of America, JP Morgan, Merrill Lynch, Deutsche Bank, and so on, you don't have many branch customers.
Yeah, no,
in the UK.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas if you were Barclays or NatWest, and you were a local commercial bank, you would have a bit of a backlash if you then effectively closed down the local football club.
Yeah, I'm just worrying that I didn't say the right thing to Radio New Zealand about Silver Lake when they said, should we be worrying about Silver Lake's investment in the All Blacks? And I went, yeah, God, hell, yeah, yeah. And I was intelligent as possible. And then kind of went, yeah, probably. No, I don't know. Yeah, definitely. I was just thinking, where's Kieran's number? The last question comes from Rick Lewis. And Rick Lewis, I like Rick Lewis. Rick Lewis says, I learned of this podcast thanks to hearing Kieran on Rovers Chat last summer. This is Blackburn Rovers. I listened to that episode twice. However, as a new American fan of Blackburn, I still don't understand their money issues. Can you just give a brief overview of why every team seems to be in debt? And what would an ideal fix for debt be? Is it just a generous benefactor who will wipe it out? Or is there another ideal path out of it? Now, the reason I like Rick is because he represents a certain sort of American fan, and Palace have had a few in recent seasons who've contacted us via the FYP pod. When an American decides to support a club in the UK, my word, they throw themselves into it. They just dedicate themselves to it completely and learn as much. Never take my advice. Never get into an argument with a new American fan about your club. They will know more than you do. And I love that enthusiasm for it. I love the fact they really buy into it and they want to know everything about it, because it reminds me of what it was like being a 10-year-old when you're just obsessed with it. And it's lovely. But Rick's asked a very big question, Kieran, which probably we haven't got long enough to answer in full. But what would the ideal fix for debt be? Is because we discuss this a lot, that you always say debt's not necessarily an issue in and of itself, is it?
Well, debt's not a problem. It's meeting your debt payments as they fall due, which is always the challenge. So we mentioned Tony Bloom at Brighton earlier. He's lent, was it 300 odd million to the club, interest free, with no fixed repayment date. So the money's come into the club. There's no evidence that he's going to ask for that money back. And that falls into, what I consider to be the best, I know I've repeated this on regular occasions, the best ownership model is that of the benevolent dictator, i.e. somebody that loves the club, puts loads of money in. It's the same with Steve Parish at Palace. First and foremost, he's a Palace fan. And that is the case. You've got the Coates family at Stoke. You've got Andy Holt at Accrington. There are people who have got genuine affection for the club, who are prepared to put money in, and they know that officially it's a loan, but to a large extent it is the bank of mum and dad, in the sense that I know I'm never going to see that money back when I lend it to our kid. Yeah, but I'll do it because he's my lad. And so on and so forth. Why are clubs in so much debt? It's because the distribution model of money in English football is so skewed towards the top that it incentivizes clubs to spend money to get there. Once they are there, they're incentivized to spend money and overspend money to avoid relegation. And when they're in the top half of the division, they're incentivized to overspend money because the rewards of getting into the Champions League and the Europa League are pretty significant as well. So everything's geared towards gambling with money. And the trouble with gambling with money is that more people lose than win.
Mm.
In the case of Blackburn, Blackburn were acquired by the Venky family in, I think it was October or November 2010. And I know people quite high up at Blackburn historically, and they said nobody understands the Venky's motives for the continued level of investment at the club, because they don't tend to come to the matches that often. But every time somebody phones them up in India, they say, how much money do you need? And they go, oh, golly gosh, yeah, it's a bit more than we expected, but here's a check. And this is just a ludicrous number. Yeah, Blackburn Rovers, yeah, good club. You know, again, great away trip. You know, fantastic fans. But under the Venkies, Blackburn Rovers have lost £383,000 a week every week for 11 years.
Yeah,
and that's... And they're just writing out that check. Oh, okay, three, isn't it? Another 383, another three. Yeah, and it's just ping, 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 ping. Absolutely incredible. And if you are doing that, and you could say, well, you know, Roman Abramovich, it cost him more money to run Chelsea, but you know, he got Premier League victories, he got Cup victories, he got Champions League victories, the World Club. You know, he got the opportunity to smile. Smiling in the Chelsea director's box in those days when he used to go on a regular basis, holding up big trophies and getting an awful lot of attention. The Venkies don't even attend matches, and you know, no disrespect to Blackburn Rovers, but you know, if they're playing Reading on a Tuesday night, there's not a lot of interest outside of Blackburn and Reading. Whereas, you know, at least if Chelsea are playing Real Madrid, you know, Abramovich knows that he's got the attention of the world's football population on his club. So it makes no sense whatsoever. But then most of football financially makes no sense whatsoever.
I'm not suggesting that this is the case, Kieran, for obvious legal reasons. But could there be something in Indian law that benefits them tax-wise by writing these checks to a losing cause every month?
I think that's highly unlikely.
Right.
Normally, in what we refer to as group relief, that's normally done on a domestic level rather than on a global level. Right. So I think it's highly unlikely.
And to answer the final part of Rick's question, is there some other ideal path out of it? The one ideal path out of it that we never seem to discuss on this pod is paying the debt. That seems to be the simple way out of it, is that you just pay the debt, but that never seems to happen. Is it that because of the huge amounts of money that you need to pay back?
Yeah, in order to repay loan, you need cash. Blackburn haven't got any. Yeah, the fact that they're, you know, the fact that every week they're 383 grand worse off means that they're never going to be in a position to have the money to repay the debt. So unless there is some, you know, ridiculous windfall from somewhere, and I just can't see how or why that's ever going to occur. That what they need to do is to get back into the Premier League and then establish themselves for 5 or 6 years, and then the Venkies might be able to sell the club. But even so, if they sell it, realistically, you'll be looking at £200 million for a club which has been established in the Premier League, as we mentioned earlier. They're in for £150 million already, so then they're not actually going to make a return on their commitment to the club.
And Rick's question, finally, Kieran, it's another example of how football fans around the world, in particular Americans, are just totally baffled by how finance works in UK football.
Yeah, well, it doesn't work. It doesn't work under any normal set of business rules. But then football's not normal.
Yeah. Therefore, you mentioned Andy Holt, Kieran, and tickets are now on sale for the second ever Price of Football Live on Tuesday. Guys put that in block capital, so I'm reading it like Sky. Price of Football Live on Tuesday, May the 10th at the Wham Stadium, home of Accrington Stanley. Of course, click on the link in the description of this episode or look at our social media feeds to get your tickets. Now they are going fast, so you need to do that quite quickly. And we look forward to seeing you. In particular, we look forward to this person. Thanks to everybody who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. It's very kind of you. Like Nathan Rogers, who says, "It's a privilege to be able to support the pod. I absolutely love it. It fuels me with great football finance news and knowledge that I get to bore my mates to death with at the pub." I think that's a compliment, which usually ends with me being sent to the bar to get the next round in. Are you listening to that, Roy? Keep up the great work, and I look forward to seeing you guys in Accrington. We look forward to seeing you, Nathan. I'll have a pint of Guinness, if that's okay. And if it's 5 to 11, I'll have a Jameson's to go with it. If you'd like to join Nathan and make a small monthly contribution to the pod, then please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meanwhile, I shall leave you in the trusty hands of Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, folks, thanks for your feedback. Thanks for your support for the show. We're genuinely chuffed to bits that so many people seem to like what we're putting out there. If you want to support the show through Patreon for as little as £1 a month, that's absolutely fantastic. You'll get our love a lot back. But if you just want to send us some good karma across the airwaves, another way that you can do that is to go to your app that you use to download podcasts, and if you can give us a review. And if you can give us 5 stars, it helps in the algorithms. It helps our credibility when we are trying to book guests, because the first thing they do is if they've not heard of the podcast, they go, where are they in the charts? And we do all right, you know, for what is a pretty specialist show. It doesn't matter, apparently, what you say in the reviews. We were talking about lizards earlier on and their long tongues. So you could even say you'd rather have the show presented by Gene Simmons of Kiss, a man legendary for the size of his tongue, and George Osborne, the former Chancellor of the Exchequer, who for some reason, some people seem to think it's a good idea to have his name on one of the bids to take over Chelsea Football Club.
Yeah, I would watch that, but they both have to wear the makeup. I'm just thinking there was some talk of maybe doing a live pod at the Amex. I'm going to have to put an end to that talk, so just in case Henry Cheese is built like Tyson Fury and has a very bad temper. I've written down loads of cheese puns here, but as you say, Kieran, the BAFTA's disappearing quickly enough as it is without me going through them. Bye, everybody.
Bye. The Price of Football. Price of Football.